listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you live today from WCPT in Chicago, from the studios of WCPT. And the tip of the hat and many thanks to Matt and all the great folks here at WCPT for giving us an opportunity to do our show today and tomorrow live from these studios. And tonight in Darien at Frugal Muse Bookstore, I will be doing a book signing for my new book, The Crash of 2016. So if you're listening in the Chicagoland area and you can get out to Darien tonight, it's at 7 o'clock at the Frugal Muse, and it should be a lot of fun. It's a free gig. It's your basic book signing. So I'll give a talk for about a half hour, maybe a little longer, and then be signing books if you would like. Anyway, all that said, the president has, tweaked the health care law. Igor Volsky knows more about this law than anybody I know. In fact, he came on our program a month or so ago and just took your calls for an hour. He's the managing editor over at the Center for American Progress's Think Progress blog. He's the co-author of Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform, the book. And the website, of course, thinkprogress.org. Igor, welcome back.
Thanks, Tom. And, you know, tweaking, twerking, it's hard to keep track of what they're doing to this law now. But yeah. Certainly they feel they got to make some changes.
Yeah, well, is this a tweak or a twerk?
Well, it's a tweak that they claim will somehow help people who are in this individual market who've had their policies canceled. At least some of them, if this change takes effect, at least some of them will be able to stay on their plans. The problem, though, comes in that if you're really interested in changing the old healthcare market and moving people into comprehensive policies, then there's really no fix to be had for the problem of cancellation notices. And it's only a problem in so much that those same people can't turn around and go and sign up for coverage in the exchanges. So they're kind of in this rough spot where he made a promise that was overstated and didn't include enough caveats. And now he has to find a fix to a problem that's really unsolvable if your goal is to transform the healthcare market and make sure people have coverage they can use.
Yeah. But didn't he make a promise that was absolutely true at the time, but I guess overstated and should have had caveats? The caveat should have been this promise will expire in January of 2011, right?
Yeah. And it was true for the overwhelming majority of Americans. It's still true for the folks who are getting their employer coverage, Medicare, Medicaid. Nothing really changes, but you do have about 5% of the market, about, you know, 5-6 million people who are going to be affected. They're in these kind of subprime plans in the individual market. And a lot of them, the good news is once they can actually go into the exchange, they'll be eligible for a subsidy and they could see costs go down. But for about 2 to 3 million who won't qualify because they make too much money, they're going to have to pay more, at least up front in premiums. I think if they eventually get sick and they have to use their care, they might pay less in that year because, you know, the care is more comprehensive. But, you know, that's a much harder political message to sell than how he said it back in the day.
Yeah. In fact, last night, or the day before yesterday, I guess it was, I was debating a conservative who had some statistic that had been hatched by one of the right-wing think tanks that if you have two people who are 60 and 62 years old and are both making $30,000 a year, they will pay more, you know. And because the numbers that have been used have been average numbers of roughly a 50-year-old and a 27-year-old or something like that. And at $60,000 aggregate income, you're above that 400% of poverty level, I'm assuming. I didn't fact check those numbers. But so there are going to be people who are what you might call, you know, high income middle class. And I'm not even sure I'd call it high income. I don't think somebody making $60,000 a year would probably describe themselves as high income. But it is, you know, way above. I mean, it's half again more than the median income in the United States. The median household income in the United States is three times almost the median individual income in the United States. But those are the folks, correct me if I'm wrong, who are probably going to have, who are going to be the ones who are going to be screaming the loudest, because they're the ones who don't qualify for the subsidies.
Yeah, but look, this law has trade-offs. So, yes, you're going to be paying more. At least that couple you mentioned may be paying more.
Right.
But they're going to be getting a plan that's, at the end of the day, it's just better. I mean, it won't be canceled on them if they get sick. The woman won't be charged more just because she's a woman. They won't be subject to annual limits, or lifetime limits on coverage. Their preventive care will be covered. I mean, there's a lot of good news here, but in order for the law to work, you know, it kinda, the money here has to come from somewhere, and if the majority of people who are middle class will either be paying the same or paying a little less, you are going to have some crop that's going to have to pay a little more, but they're going to be paying more for a more sustainable system, and a system in which their neighbor won't be denied coverage so that they could have coverage because they're healthy and they're the ones that insurers really want to sign up. So, and, you know, it's a period of transition, and those bumps are just kind of natural in any kind of process, any kind of effort to implement big change. Unfortunately, we're living through it in a very polarized D.C. where it's kind of magnified to really crazy proportions.
Yeah, actually, I want to finish talking about the healthcare side of it, and then I'd like to discuss the politics side of it with you, if that's okay.
Sure.
On the healthcare side of it, isn't it probable that people who have plans that they think they like are and say, hey, you know, don't mess with my plan. I'll just keep my plan. And even if the rates go up, you know, and I've got to pay a little extra or even a lot extra, I'll still keep this plan. Isn't it highly likely, because these are non-compliant plans, that sometime next year those people are going to, you know, many of those people are going to sit down and say, yeah, I'll check this thing out, and go on the website, go on the government website, and at some point do the forehead slap thing. Oh my goodness, you know, I could be paying half as much, or I could get to, you know, twice the coverage, or you know, fill in the blanks. And then they're going to want to move on to the government plan, or to the, excuse me, now none of these are government plans, but they're going to move on to the plans that are offered through the exchanges. And that seems like kind of the good news. But B, then don't they come up against the, no, you've got to wait until next, what is it, October for the enrollment period?
Yeah, enrollment period is next October, and it's a lot shorter than the 6 months. It's about 2 months, the next enrollment period. You're right. And I think the reason why we're not hearing kind of a collective slap now from these people who are in the individual market and having their policies canceled is because oftentimes the cancellation letters don't inform policyholders about the options in the exchanges, about the tax credits that are available in the exchange, because at the end of the day, the insurer is motivated to push you into their own line of products and not...
They're banksters. Come on. They want to make money.
Exactly.
I mean, these guys are actually banksters. They're not really in the health business. They're in the moving money business. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Which I guess leads us to the politics of this. Igor, can you stick around and we can continue this conversation after the break?
Yes.
Okay, we'll be back in 4 or 5 minutes here right after this brief commercial break, an opportunity for you to support your local stations. And we'll be talking with Igor Volsky, who is the managing editor of the Think Progress blog and co-author of Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform, thinkprogress.org, of course, the website. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Thursday. I'm live from Chicago from WCPT, and tonight in Darien, Illinois at the Frugal Muse Bookstore, 7 o'clock. Be there or be square. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live on on the air from Chicago. We're doing our show out of the studios of WCPT, and tonight in Darien, Illinois, I will be doing a book signing for my new book, The Crash of 2016, The Plot to Destroy America and How We Can Stop It. And Igor Volsky is with us. He is the managing editor of the Think Progress blog and the author of Howard Dean, or co-author of Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform. ThinkProgress.org is his website. Igor, are you still with us?
Oh, yes. Oh,
great. Thank you. The politics of this, I think I have an understanding. I'm assuming our listeners and viewers have an understanding of the essence of it, which is basically that the president has the administrative power and is using that administrative power to say that in the implementation of this law, we're going to allow people on individual plans to stay on that plan for another year if they choose to, if their provider chooses to. Although my recollection is, in reading the news story on this, and fact check this with me, please, is that he is putting some pretty strong language in there about how the insurance companies can't basically flimflam people anymore. They have to tell them the nature of the policy that they're continuing to buy and what else might be available to them. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's really the best part of his proposal, that insurers will now have to inform everyone that about the limitations of the grandfather plans, that there are more options available in the exchanges, and that they could qualify for subsidies. I mean, that's really good. Everything else in terms of allowing insurers to continue their plans, we'll see how insurers react, but so far the early reaction hasn't been very promising. And the reason is, once an insurer cancels a policy, it's very difficult, just logistically, to bring that policy back. In fact, it's almost impossible, just in the way they set premiums for a given period of time, and who enrolls in those policies.
But this is November, and these, quote, canceled policies, end quote, are all really just cancellation notices effective January 1st, are they not?
Some of them are. Others are policies that have already gone away.
Where somebody had bought it and it just normally expired on the 1st of November, for example. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. But it's a lot of the policies, for instance, had been canceled previously in anticipation of Obamacare if they hadn't been grandfathered, or even if they were grandfathered and are now losing their grandfathered status. But, you know, I think there are kind of multi-levels here. One is, this is all about giving insurers and states more flexibility. And then the state portion here is very important, because you have to first convince the state commissioner of insurance to adapt this flexibility, to allow for this. That's right. Going to vary state by state. Then you have to convince the insurer to go ahead and reverse the decision they've made to cancel the policy. And very few, I think, are going to do that. So at the end of the day, the effect of this in terms of how many more people are going to be able to keep their policies, I think, is going to be fairly limited, which, of course, sets up another political problem for the president in a month or in some period of time down the road. And the Democratic politics on this are just really infuriating, because the Democrats are basically saying, we're going to adopt a policy change that could potentially undermine Obamacare in order to keep a promise about Obamacare we made about how great it was going to be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of, they have themselves in knots here.
Or at least some of them do, the ones that were up for re-election.
A growing number, sadly, do, particularly those running for office, are really kind of trying to cling to any bill they see. You know, the policy implications we should mention are quite real, because if you have a large number of people in the individual market who stay in their current plans and don't join the exchanges like they were supposed to in 2014, you're really putting a lot of stress on the risk pool in those exchanges.
And this is what the, what is it, AHIP or whatever, the health insurance trade association has already said, is we don't like this because it's going to change all of our actuarial calculations.
Well, that's right. But yeah, they made their calculations on what the premiums were going to be based on the assumption that everyone was going to transition from their individual plan into the exchange. Okay. Now that's possibly goes out the window. So what does that mean for their risk pool? The big question being, are the young and healthy people who they relied on to balance out the pool, are they still going to come into the exchange, or are they going to stay in these individual plans?
And my sense of this is that this is going to play out the same way Medicare did, the same way Medicare Part D did, the same way Social Security did. Although all of those programs, you had both Republicans and Democrats working over the years to improve them. And right now you have Republicans just aggressively doing nothing but sabotage.
Yeah, but for Republicans, the politics is kind of part of a bigger effort to piece by piece go after the law.
Yeah, and we just have a minute left, Igor. How do you think this is going to play out politically? It seems to me like, you know, something will pass in the House and probably a bunch of Democrats will sign on because they're Fred Upton's bill or something because they're afraid of it being used against them in an election. It won't make it through the Senate. Something will come out of the Senate, Mary Landrieu's bill. It won't even be brought up in the House. And if either one of them, you know, magically make it through both, the president will veto it, right?
Yes, I think the only political solution for the president is to fix the website. If he fixes the website, some of the political pressure will dissipate, particularly in the red states where Democrats are running and hear it from their constituents about canceled policies, because those people will be able to go into the exchanges and find a better option. That's really the only solution here. Everything else is not very workable, I fear.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, making this work. And time. I mean, you know, time heals all wounds. The problem is, while the White House is not in play until 2016, every single member of the House of Representatives, both Democratic and Republican, is up for re-election in 2014, and a third of the Senate is up for re-election in 2014. So we got a real interesting political situation. Igor, it is so great having you on. Thank you so much for being with us.
I'm always a pleasure.
Keep up the great work. And you can read Igor's work over at thinkprogress.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So the president is changing the health care plan. Your thoughts on that? I'll share some of mine right after the break. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you live from Chicago, WCPT, where tonight in Chicago suburb Darien, Illinois, I will be signing the crash of 2016 at the Frugal Muse. I love that, M-U-S-E. You know, like, I'm going to muse on this. The Frugal Muse Bookstore, 7 o'clock tonight in Darien. So if you're in the Chicago area, love to see you tonight. Anyhow, my thoughts on Obamacare and this health care, and then I'm going to pick up your calls on this because and pretty much anything else you want to talk about. I've been in and out throughout this week, and I will be in and out throughout next week. And there may be a lot of things that, for example, that you had discussed with Dr. Mike that you'd like to get my take on, or other things in the news that you want to get into. So we can sort of call it an anything goes book tour week if you'd like. Okay, first of all, as you know, and I'm sure you have to know this, you know, for the 10 years I've been doing this radio program and for years before that I was writing books as a progressive, been a progressive at least since I was 15 years old, or 16, let's say, somewhere in there. Anyway, my idea of what a healthcare system should be like, and absolutely, since 1986, when Louise and I and our three kids lived in Germany for a year and used what was then essentially a single-payer healthcare system, where we never had to have anything other than, as I recall, a 6 or 7-digit number. And you didn't even have to have the card. You just say, here's the number, and they'd type it in and say, is your name Tom Hartman? And I'd say, yes, and boom, bang, you know, that's it. I mean, literally, the doctor's offices had no cashier. The hospital did not have an office where you paid for things. Now, things might have changed since then, but that's how it was in the 80s. And ever since then, I've thought, yeah, that's how they should do it, you know? And that's how we should be doing it. Frankly, that's how Medicare should be done. There should be no copays and deductibles and all this other nonsense in Medicare. It should be just health insurance. You're over 65, health insurance. And then we should just lower that eligibility age to zero. And Medicare should have been, Medicare as it stands, only at any age, should have been one of the options. We would call that a public option. Bill Salmon of Fox News, as I talk about in my book, The Crash of 2016, famously sent out a memo telling everybody at Fox News to refer to this as the government option, because public option polls well, but government option sounds, I don't remember the phrase he used, but something like insidious. So anyhow, you know, that's my take on that I would prefer that. And frankly, one of the main reasons why I am so enthusiastic about Obamacare, there are two reasons why I'm enthusiastic, actually, about Obamacare. The first is that the law has built into it this backdoor trapdoor that says after 2016, any state that can demonstrate that they're going to provide all of their citizens with the same level of coverage that Obamacare provides can do it any way they want. And in fact, Massachusetts is already grandfathered in. And so the state of Vermont, Peter Shumlin, the governor there, you know, he ran for election. He was a state senator. He ran for election as governor on the platform of, I will turn this state single payer. We're going to do what Saskatchewan did. Excuse me. We're going to do what Saskatchewan did back in the it was either the late 50s or early 60s. And we're going to go, you know, single payer. And then he won, and the Democrats won a majority in the House and the Senate in Vermont, and they passed it. And they're spending now the year or two before 2016 putting together the actual program, you know, funding it, getting the people in place, building the administrative bureaucracy necessary to do it, because it's not going to be done with health insurance companies. Health insurance companies are just banksters. They just handle the money. And they skim a huge profit off the top, enough that the CEO of United Healthcare has taken over $1 billion of your dollars if you use United Healthcare or you use Medicare Advantage from United Healthcare or from AARP. Over $1 billion. And the guy before him took over $1 billion. So these guys are just banksters. So the state can do it itself and not skim that money off the top. And instead of doing it at 20% or 25% or 30% overhead, they can do it at 2% or 3% overhead. So Vermont is putting that together, and there's no doubt in my mind, if that works in Vermont, and there's no reason it shouldn't, because it has worked in every other developed country in the world that has tried it, which is all of them. I mean, there's variations, but you get the point. Once that works in Vermont, other states are going to go, we should try this. And, you know, I think within a decade, maybe less, a generation at the most, 20 years at the most, you're going to see every state in the country with a single payer healthcare system and some sort of federal oversight over all of them, which will essentially be Obamacare. You know, it says here's the standards, which is how it works in Canada. Each state administers, or each province administers, their own plan, but the federal government then provides some oversight and some standards. So that's the first thing that I love about it, and I really love that about Obamacare. And that's why, you know, I think Republicans are so adamant about wanting to repeal it, because they know that, and they know that's the direction this is going. And then when they start screaming about socialized medicine and single payer health care and this is where it's going, that's what they're talking about, number one. And number two, it has started the conversation in the United States that we should have had back in 1947, when Harry Truman proposed a single payer health care system for the United States. He proposed Medicare for everybody. This was before Medicare. Medicare came into being in 64, 65 as part of the LBJ's Great Society. Before then, Harry Truman said, let's do this for everybody in the country. And, of course, the Republicans controlled the House of Representatives, and they refused to pass it. He didn't even get to veto it. I mean, it just never even got out of committee. But he was pushing really, really hard. And we should have been having that conversation ever since 1947, and we never seriously had that conversation in the United States. And we're having that conversation right now, and it is becoming very, very clear that there's a small group of cranky billionaires who think that if they can get college students drunk enough, they won't buy health insurance. Now, why these cranky billionaires don't want college students to have health insurance is beyond me, beyond the, you know, other than that, gee, if we have a national single-payer health care system, it may be that rich people are going to have to pick up some of the expenses for poor people. God forbid. So you got the Koch brothers and their Generation Cocktopus or whatever. So, no, it's Generation Opportunity. You know, sponsoring keggers. Opt out. So, anyway. Will in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on KTNF. Hey, Will, I'm going to be in your town this Saturday night. Will? You are on the air. I'm not hearing Will. He's up, but you're not hearing him either. Okay, great. I'm going to drop Will. Oh, in fact, there's something I need to mention about KTNF. Let me just get to my one sheet real quickly here and mention this, and then I will pick up the next caller. If you bought tickets to come see me in Minnesota on Saturday, and Saturday I'll be there, please note that some of those tickets were printed with the incorrect event address. So no matter what the address printed on your ticket is, the gig is going to happen at the Operating Engineers Hall at 2829 Anthony Lane in Minneapolis. And apparently about 40 tickets were printed with the saying that it was at the area or something like that. And it's not. It's going to be at the Operating Engineers Hall at 2829 Anthony Lane. And so if your ticket doesn't say that, ignore what the ticket says. Check out the website, AM950. I don't have the website here in front of me, so I don't want to. AM950radio.com. Thank you very much, Shano. So, okay, back to the phones. Judo in Lithia, Florida. Hey, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? I got two questions. My first one is, why don't the Democrats use the angle that, you know, covering everybody with health care is the patriotic thing to do? I mean, you know, you might hear it once or twice, but they don't really use that angle or that tactic, you know, or at least I don't see it.
I don't know. I'm baffled by it too. I mean, the other night I was on Crossfire and I brought this up and you know, basically said, why don't we make the comparison between healthcare and fire insurance, you know, which we call firehouses, you know, it was kind of met with a yawn. I think your messaging is right on. So anyhow, yeah. So thanks for the call, Judo. Bill in Clifton, New Jersey, listening to WWRL. We just got just a minute to the break. Bill, what's up?
Okay, yeah. Hi, Tom. This is something I wish you would ask Bernie, that why isn't the government offering subsidies to the insurance companies to get out of the business and go into true health care by building teaching hospitals and going...
Well, there's a really simple answer to that, Bill. Health insurance companies are banks. That's what they are. I mean, they're insurance companies. They handle money. They wouldn't know what to do with an ample of penicillin and a syringe. They wouldn't have a clue.
But they're coming to an end. There's no place for them. They have to use. They got trillions of dollars. They have to move it somewhere.
I know. Well, see, this is the thing. I mean, they're just trying to stretch this thing out as long as they can and squeeze as much money out of the American public as they can. And I think that they have, you know, a decade, more or less. We'll see how it plays out. But to just give the health insurance companies money, well, essentially that's what Obamacare is doing. Actually, Bill, I think that's the answer to your question, is that's what the president is doing. He's giving health insurance companies guaranteed customers, profitable customers, in exchange for eventually going away. Bill, thanks a lot for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Or at least in exchange for eventually becoming a lot less profitable and less leech-like. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live from Chicago. We're doing our show from the studios of WCPT today and tomorrow, because tonight I'll be in Darien, Illinois at the Frugal Muse bookstore. So if you're in the area, Darien is a suburb of Chicago, and Frugal Muse is a really cool bookstore that I've done several book signings at before, and we're going to have a great time tonight. And on Saturday, I'll be in Minneapolis. And if you want, and that's going to be more of a tonight is just a traditional book signing, you know, show up at the bookstore and sign books. On Saturday, though, we're having a party, basically. You are invited. You have to get tickets for the Saturday gig in Minneapolis. And you buy the tickets over at AM950radio.com. Do I have that right? Yeah, AM950radio.com. And the cost of the ticket includes basically the afternoon and the evening. There's going to be food, there's going to be a bar, there's going to be, and you get a book. And this is, you know, one of those, fancy, expensive new hardcover books. So you get it all. And if you, by the way, and if you were one of the early, one of the first 40 people who signed up, the tickets had the incorrect address on them. So just check your, check over at the radio site at am950.com, am950radio.com for the correct address. That's for Saturday. Tonight is in Darien. So that's what's up with that. So, oh, by the way, there were hearings on the climate, on climate change today, and the Republicans really didn't want to talk about it because over 70% or three quarters of the Republicans didn't even believe that climate change is happening. They think this is a conspiracy by scientists to like get grants or something. And so they asked the EPA administrator, what was it, Lisa Jackson? I think I'd have to go back and look at the story, but they asked her, do you have Obamacare? And she said, no, I have government health insurance, and I'm quite happy with it, although I look forward someday to, you know, when I'm no longer a government employee, having the options that Obamacare will provide me. And so then the next Republican congressman says, oh, I'm glad to hear that you are happy not to have Obamacare. And he tweets that out, you know, it's totally out of context. These guys can turn anything into politics. It's sad, bizarre, and, well, sad and bizarre. Lisa in Leander, Texas. Hey, Lisa, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. You know, I vote for Obama. I listen to your show all the time. But I didn't vote for the health care plan. I voted against Romney this time because, you know, there was no choice. But what I see that I think you're overlooking in this health care plan is that this is forcing everybody into the American health care system. And this is a system that's broken. When you look at Europe, they've made the advancements to recognize that GMOs are killing people and causing all kinds of sicknesses. They've made advances to get away from antibiotics. They've made advances in all of their surgeries. And the, you know, in the United States, I work on people. I'm a massage therapist. I've been doing it for 30 years. I see about the same amount of people survive from cancer going to a hospital as I see surviving from natural means. The healthcare system that we're in right now is trying to get rid of vitamins. They're trying, the whole system makes it impossible to get healthy food or food that doesn't have pus in it from antibiotics or shots in it or arsenic. And the Obamacare system is doing nothing but throwing people into this healthcare system that's broken. We're 80% of the American.
So, Lisa, I don't disagree with you. And that's why I said the thing that excites me the most is that what Obamacare does is in 2 years it allows states to go to single-payer systems like Europe, most Western European countries have, or all, virtually all of them. And, I mean, Switzerland's is a little different hybrid, but same difference. I'm with you. And I think that our health insurance and our federal programs, you know, things like Medicare, Medicaid, should be expanded because I personally believe that massage therapy is therapeutic, not just for somebody who has a physical injury and needs physical therapy, but, you know, that it produces, you know, endorphins that heal the body, that you know, all this stuff. I mean, you do this for a living. This should be covered. Chiropractic care should be covered. If somebody wants to see a homeopath, that should be covered. If all of these things, and as they were when I, you know, when we lived in Germany, there was a doctor. We lived in a little town of like 13,000 people. The doctor in our town was an herbologist. The doctor in the next town over, we lived in Stadtsteinach. The next town over was Kronach, as I recall, another little tiny town with a castle. And their doctor was mostly into homeopathy. Now, both of them would give you an antibiotic if you asked for it. But, you know, that was what they really were passionate about. And you could just kind of pick any doctor that you wanted to, you know, whatever your particular shtick was. So, Lisa, I totally agree with you. And here we are in the United States. What's the alternative?
The alternative is to get Monsanto and Big Pharma out of our healthcare system entirely.
Okay.
So
let's do that.
Obamacare does not go into natural health plans.
No, I understand that. So let's do that. Let's join Progressive Democrats of America, PDAmerica.org, or MoveToAmend.org, or whatever it may be, you know, your favorite local organization. Let's try to infiltrate the Democratic Party. Let's participate with other political parties if that's your particular preference. But let's not just complain about it. Let's do something about it. I'm sure you are, and I am. And we, you know, identifying the problems is only half. It's only the first step. Then we have to solve them. Lisa, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Logan in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Logan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just want to ask, because I've been really confused about this, and I think a lot of people are too. When people refer to the rules of Obamacare, the regulations of Obamacare, and that these certain plans aren't meeting these rules, does that mean that these plans can't receive a subsidy and they don't?
No. What it means is that there are plans out there right now where if you get sick, the health insurance company can say, okay, that's it. We're canceling your policy. It's called rescission. And they do it fairly routinely. That's illegal now. There are plans out there where you may think you have hospitalization. They told you, hey, you're covered when you go to the hospital. But it turns out you're covered at the rate of $50 a day, and it can cost you $10,000 a day to go to the hospital. You know, that kind of thing. They're the health insurance equivalents of subprime mortgages. They're exploding insurance policies. And people don't discover how bad they are until they get sick. That's why half of all bankruptcies in the United States are caused by somebody getting sick. A quarter of all bankruptcies in the United States are caused by somebody getting sick who thought they were fully insured, who had health insurance, and still it wiped them out. Those are the policies, Logan, thank you for the call. Those are the policies that Obamacare is saying can't have those anymore. And that the president just essentially said, okay, maybe another year.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live from Chicago's WCPT, where tonight I'll be in Darien, Illinois at the Frugal Muse Bookstore signing my new book, The Crash of 2016. And if you're in the area, get out there at 7 o'clock tonight. Be there or be square, as they say. Back in 1960, and we have this EDNA law, this Employment Non-Discrimination Act, right now that just passed the Senate that would prohibit discrimination against people in the workplace because they happen to be gay or gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, basically because of their sexual orientation. There's a parallel for this. The Supreme Court has ruled that gays have the right to marry, right? We just, this, you know, just last year, basically. Well, actually not, but they you get the point. The Supreme Court has kind of gone in the direction of, let's say, Brown v. Board with regard to this. And in 1954, in Brown v. Board, the Supreme Court actually ruled that segregated schools were illegal. They were unconstitutional. So in the election of 1960, this became a big issue. Should we pass a law, or should we enforce the laws that were on the books in such a way that employers who were saying, you know, most of my customers are white, they don't want black waiters waiting on them, or they don't want a black store clerk taking care of them. So why should I offend my customers? I just want to hire white people. And that was a big issue in the election of 1960, and it was part of the Nixon-Kennedy debate. And Nixon took the position that, really, you should just leave it to private business. We'll try and make an effort. We will get together. In fact, he said, as vice president, you know, under Eisenhower, he had had the attorney general sit down with these chain store, you know, the Woolworths, because they wouldn't let black people sit in the lunch counters. He said, we're going to sit down with them and ask them to be nice. And we saw how that worked out in the mid-60s. Kennedy, on the other hand, said, I'm going to use the law and kick their butts. Here's just a very short clip from this, and then we're going to have a conversation with C. Edmund Wright about it. Here, first of all, is Richard Nixon from 1960.
I have talked to Negro mothers. I've heard them try to explain how they tell their children how they can go into a store and buy a loaf of bread, but then can't go into that store and sit at the counter and get a Coca-Cola. This is wrong, and we have to do something about it. So under the circumstances, what do we do? Well, what we do is what the Attorney General of the United States did under the direction of the President. Call in the owners of chain stores and get them to take action.
Right, right. And, you know, 6 years later, they were still going after them with axe handles and fire hoses. And so here's what John Kennedy said he would do.
Senator Kennedy.
Well, Mr. Nixon hasn't discussed the two basic questions. What is going to be done and what will be his policy on implementing the Supreme Court decision of 1954? Giving aid to schools technically that are trying to carry out the decision is not the great question. Secondly, what's he going to do to provide fair employment? He's been the head of the Committee on Government Contracts. It's carried out two cases, both in the District of Columbia. He has not indicated his support of an attempt to provide fair employment practices around the country so that everyone can get a job regardless of their race or color. Nor has he indicated that he will support Title III, which would give the Attorney General additional powers to protect constitutional rights. These are the great questions. Equality of education in schools. About 2% of our population white people is illiterate, 10% of our colored population. 60 to 70% of our colored children do not finish high school. These are the questions in these areas that the North and the Southeast and West are entitled to know. What will be the leadership of the President in these areas to provide equality of opportunity for employment, equality of opportunity in the field of housing, which could be done on all federal-supported housing by a stroke of the President's pen? What will be done to provide equality of education in all sections of the United States? Those are the questions to which the President must establish a moral tone and moral leadership. And I can assure you that if I'm elected President, we will do so.
There you go. C. Edmund Wright is with us, conservative commentator, contributor to Breitbart, and the American thinker, the author of WTF, How Karl Rove and the Establishment Lost Again. His website, C. Edmund, E-D-M-U-N-D, Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T.com. And C, do I call you C? Oh, hang on. I've got to push the button. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
No problem. Edmund's probably a little easier, Tom.
Okay, Edmund, welcome to the program. I think that you've been on our program before.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Well, welcome back then. I'm sorry. I'm so terrible with names.
I was here with Mike, not you. So.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome back to the program in any case. So it seems to me that basically what's going on is in the Senate, the Democrats are taking the position that John Kennedy took. You know, with only now the civil rights issue is whether people who are gay are going to be discriminated against in the workplace. And John Boehner is saying, yeah, you know, there's no droids in this car. There's no problem here. This is something that should just be left up between the employers and the community and the gay people that they may choose to discriminate or not discriminate against them. Doesn't history indicate from what we just heard that Republican position loses?
Well, it might if your analogy was valid, but I just reject that there's a valid analogy between skin color and sexual preference. I mean, there are a lot of problems.
You don't think people are born with both?
Well, you know, I'm not going to claim to know that, but I will say this. People do change sexual preferences and they go in and out of the transgender lifestyle apparently, so that at least is one difference, whether or not it happens naturally or it happens as a result of culture. The fact of the matter is, you know, and apparently under ENDA, you can be different things on different days, and your employer has to roll with the punches. I would also say that that the racial issue there would have sorted itself out without government control. Now it ended up being government passed legislation.
And we've been working on that for almost 200 years at that time.
Well, I know, but there's you can ignore the fact that there's tremendous. Tremendous progress in that area or not. It's bad for the race pimp industry to admit that. But the fact remains, I just reject the premise that the two issues are equal. So I don't think the analogy holds up maybe more than 10%.
So you're suggesting that straight people wanting to discriminate against gay people, or for that matter, gay people wanting to discriminate against
exactly.
straight people, I guess.
You know what?
That this is not a civil rights issue, is your assertion.
No, I don't think it is. And I do, what you just said, Tom, I think is a good point. I think there are certain types of businesses that are in certain parts of the country that cater to certain clientels that would actually benefit from having all gay or all transgender workforces, and that would be fine.
You know, I'll tell you, one of the first jobs that I ever had when I was a DJ at WITL, I was the DJ at Joe Covello's bar in Lansing, Michigan, which was the local gay bar, and I used to DJ the drag show and other things, and it was a great gig. I loved the place, I loved the people, and I was straight and still am. And, you know, I was very appreciative of the fact
but let me ask you,
I was respected.
Let me ask you something, and I have no reason to doubt anything about that story. Wouldn't you have understood it if the bar owner, club owner, whoever hired you would have preferred, you know, a gay DJ?
Probably, but having a gay bar, this yeah, and this is where you get into these, you know, okay, is being in an organization that is principally like the NAACP, you know, is that racial discrimination? And those are the kind of gray areas that I think don't make for a reasonable discussion on this. I think that, you know, the reality is that the 99% of what we're talking about here are people who are living in fear that their employer will discover that they are gay and fire them.
It shouldn't be. I would reject that premise, but again, I will say this. I think that a person who is gay or straight or confused about the two that goes and puts in the time and the effort and the money to start a business of whatever kind, I think that person, male, female, or switching back and forth, should be able to hire and fire what is in the best interest of his and her business. Now, I will tell you this. I've had a couple thousand employees in my life. I have no idea what...
Edmund, we're flat out of time, but you've made your point very well. People can check it out at cedmundwright.com. Thank you for being with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
C. Edmund Wright, he's the author of WTF, How Karl Rove and the Establishment Lost Again, cedmundwright.com, the website. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, Koch Brothers... Americans for Prosperity spent $122 million last year, subsidized by you and me. They're a nonprofit organization, so we pay all of their commons expenses, use of the court system, things like that. Quite a subsidy. Let's talk about this for just a minute, the conversation that I just had with C. Edmund Wright. Probably I didn't, well, not probably, I absolutely didn't use the best example I could have or should have in saying, hey, you know, I once worked in a gay bar and nobody discriminated against me. There is a difference, and I didn't have an immediate appropriate response to C. Edmund Wright, and my apologies for that. It took me, sometimes it takes a minute. So here's my thinking on this, and, you know, I see that the board is entirely full, all 12 lines are on hold right now, mostly about Obamacare, which you talked about in the last hour, which is fine, and I'll pick up your calls. But, you know, if you want to call and talk about this issue as well, this Aetna issue, I think this is a big deal. And I think John Boehner is going to be hurt badly by this, by refusing, by saying, oh, there's no such thing. If there was, it wasn't a frivolous lawsuit. So wait on it. But the most importantly, setting aside the politics, I think it's a big deal because people's lives are being hurt. There's a difference between being in the majority and being in the minority. And that's what Jack Kennedy got and was talking about, and it's what Richard Nixon didn't get. And I don't want to characterize my last guest, he's not here to defend himself, but I would say in general that what John Boehner is saying is that he doesn't understand that difference. There's a reason why having a traditionally black college and continuing to call it a traditionally black college, or having an organization that's principally African Americans and continuing to call it the NAACP, is an okay thing. But having an organization that's the National Association for the Advancement of White People, or having a college where you say, you know, we're just going to admit white people, is not a good thing. even though in the conservative world, on this kind of surface logic, that seems like a double standard. It's not. Because it has to do with the tyranny of the majority over the minority. It has to do with economic, political, social power. At the most visceral level, I mean, not just the power to employ or not employ, to educate or not educate, but the power to include or exclude from the mainstream of society in ways that lead to devastated lives, suicides, broken marriages, multi-generational crises and distress. There is a difference between being in the majority and having that white privilege, and in this case, I would say straight privilege, that I have enjoyed all my life, and being in the minority, and being a person of color, and not having instant access to everything that a person born white in this country has. Or being a person whose sexual preference is not plain vanilla, straight, normal, whatever you want to call it, and therefore falling outside of what you might call the mainstream, and being in a position where simply because of who they are with relationship to their perception of themselves with regard to their sexuality. And it's almost, sexuality is almost the wrong word because it implies that it's all about sex. It's not. It's about gender. Their gender identity. It's about who am I? Am I a white straight guy? Well, I am. But am I gay or straight? Am I black or white? Am I a person? You know, who am I? And if the answer to that who am I is something that falls outside the mainstream in such a way that the mainstream has a long history of not just pushing aside people of color or gay people, not just pushing them aside, but of destroying them. Literally from the founding of this country. People have been killed for being gay. To this day. Literally from the founding of this country to this day, people have been killed for being a person of color. White people can't make that claim because they've been the killers, not the killees. They've been the oppressors, not the oppressees. They've been I am part of that club. And it's those of us who are part of that club that need to really get it. That the logic that says, well, why can't black people get together and discriminate against white people? I mean, after all, why can't gay people get together and discriminate against... That kind of logic is fundamentally racist and bigoted at its core. Because it fails to acknowledge the history. It fails to acknowledge the reality of those people's experience in life. It fails to acknowledge the extraordinary difficulties these people are having in this society as a consequence simply of who they are. Not even what they want to do. That's why I said it's not about sex. It's about who they are. And so my apologies for not instantly replying that way. I was so wrapped up in my own memory and story of Joe Cavallo's bar that I just waited. It's been, you know, I got up at 4 o'clock this morning. What can I say? Eddie, we'll be back. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We're live today from WCPT in Chicago. Tonight I'll be at Frugal Muse Bookstore in Darien, suburban Chicago, signing Crash of 2016, 7 p.m. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live from WCPT in Chicago, where tonight I will be in Darien, a Chicago suburb. I believe it's a, well, I shouldn't even say. Because I may get it wrong. If you live in Chicago, you know where it is, or you can look it on a map. I was going to say, I think it's a northwestern suburb, but I could be very wrong. But in any case, I've been there before. Frugal Muse Bookstore. I think I've done at least two book signings there. It's a great bookstore, great people, and we're going to have a great time tonight, 7 o'clock. And so if you're in the Chicagoland area, be out there tonight at 7 o'clock. I look forward to seeing you and saying hi, and I'll be giving a rousing summary. You don't even have to buy the book. I'm going to tell you everything that's in it. So, well, almost everything. I mean, to the extent that you can do it in 45 minutes to an hour. So that's what's up with that. And as I mentioned before the break, every single line is full. So let's pick up some calls here. Wayne in Chicago, listening on CPT. Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Welcome to Chicago.
Thank you. It's great to be back in the Midwest where I grew up.
Yes, I have a question for you. Now, I haven't read your book yet. I'm going to get it. But my question is, back in 1929, most of the people, the overwhelming majority of the people, did not have money. So money still had value. But this time around, the greatest theft in the history of the world has occurred because trillions upon trillions of dollars have been printed and distributed both here and around the world. Then you have this black shadow market of derivatives. So how do you come to the conclusion that money will still be worth something in this next crash?
If the crash is deflationary, Wayne, where prices fall because money is so very, very, very hard to get, and my guess is it will be, because a whole different set of forces create inflationary crashes, and they're not the ones that we're facing right now, then money becomes dear. And these are the kind of crashes that very, very wealthy people like because they have cash. And, your home may be worth $100,000, but if the crash is really, really bad, you may be willing to sell it for $20,000 because that's all anybody will pay for it. And that's, you know, and so what has happened is the value of housing has dropped by 80%. And the value of everything, or the price of, you know, of everything drops. The value is actually increased fivefold, arguably, for the average person, for somebody who doesn't have money. So I don't think that, the derivative market, you've put your finger on one of the big parts of the problem, and this is something I'll be talking about tonight in Darien, is how, Ken Lay, as the head of Enron, wanted to be able to gamble in derivatives and wanted to be able to have a bank, basically, that he could run because the bankers were catching him running his scams. He had over 800 companies that made up what was called Enron. And he was moving money around to, you know, an internal Ponzi scheme, as it were, so that everybody thought everything was wonderful. And, Wendy Graham was on his board of directors. Phil Graham was a United States Senator, Republican. And Phil Graham got Graham-Leach-Bliley, which blew up Glass-Steagall, which allowed commercial banks and gambling banks to merge, and got the Commodity Futures Modernization Act passed, which allowed Ken Lay to gamble in energy futures and as well I don't think that he ever got into it, but he could have allowed the banks to gamble in futures based on an underlying derived value from a mortgage. And that drove the crash much the same way that in the 1920s you could buy stock on margin on a 2%, 3%, 5% margin, sometimes no margin at all if the investment broker was willing to just take your word for it. And that playing the edge, playing these huge percentages and making these huge profits as a result of it as the market went up, what that led to was huge losses as the market went down. And that's what I'm predicting is going to happen in the derivatives market and in the general market as well when this bubble bursts. Am I making sense, Wayne?
You printed so much money and there's nothing to back it up, how is it going to have value? Because you printed so much of it.
You're assuming that there was something that backed it up in 1929 that's different than now?
Okay, that's the question.
There wasn't.
Did we have any backed up with gold and silver in 1929?
Well, yeah, we were arguably on the gold standard in 1929, but what that meant was that as our economy grew, our gold reserves had to grow. It didn't mean that the value of the United States dollar since the mid-19th century anyway, since after the Civil War, and since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution and America becoming one of the nations, one of the world's most powerful manufacturing forces, the value of the U.S. dollar has had very little to do with gold. I would say virtually nothing to do with gold. It has had to do with the full faith and credit of the United States and the wealth of this nation and the ability of this nation to generate wealth. And so, in a very real way, I mean, I know that there are gold bugs who are just, it's all about the gold, and, without going back to, the kind of Ron Paul thing, without going back to gold, you're not going to have money that actually has value. I don't buy that. I don't believe that. I think that even though we were on the gold standard in 1929, we had functionally a fiat currency because it radically changed in value from one year to the next because of the availability of credit. The average person could get credit and buy stock in 1928 and early 1929. They couldn't in 1930. The dollar was still, convertible to the exact same amount of gold, but the ability to get a dollar, the ability to use a dollar, the quote value end quote of the dollar changed dramatically, or the meaning of the dollar. Let's stop using the word value and start using the word meaning. The meaning of the dollar changed dramatically because of the change in economic circumstances. And that's what happened in 2008, or what began to happen in 2007, 2008. And that's what is going to have to happen at some point unless we go back. I mean, we could avoid this if we roll back Glass-Steagall, if we undid the Commodity Futures Modernization Act, if we roll back the Reagan tax cuts, if we fundamentally changed our trade policies and went from having a third of our economy being banking, which is insane, it's just moving money around, it doesn't create actual wealth, and 10% of our economy being manufacturing. If we went back to where it was when Reagan came into office, when a third of our economy was manufacturing and a little less than 10% of our economy was banking, insurance, and real estate. So, we could avoid this. But you and I both know, Wayne, the political will, the political ability is not there. I mean, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats and the president, President Obama, campaigned on many of these things. Let's change these structural things. I mean, it was fairly obvious to him, I think, in 2008 what caused the crash. But, the best he could get was a rather meager and weak stimulus that basically stopped the bleeding. But the patient is still very, very sick. So. Have I answered your question, Wayne? Because I do want to move along. Thank you very much for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. Paul, in Woodinville, Washington, listening on KBCS. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hey. I'm always amused to see Edmund Wright. I reject that premise. He rejects every premise.
Yeah, I guess.
Apparently he doesn't get it that two parties have to agree on a premise before you can begin the debate. He doesn't. Otherwise.
Yeah. Well, he's not here to defend himself, so let's speak in the abstract, okay?
All you have to do is listen to him. I've heard him before. Yeah. Otherwise, it degenerates into the Monty Python argument clinic,
Yes. No, we're not having an argument.
$5.
That'll be £5, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
Would you like some cheese, Paul?
this
parrot is dead. I'm sorry.
No matter where you go, there you are.
Yes.
No matter where you go, the Republicans are back there.
Yes.
I mean, that's my segue to what I want to talk about, the Affordable Care Act. And, I was interested to hear what President Clinton said about, I think we should fix this, what he said this week.
Right.
About fixing and people's plans that were canceled and we need to make good on this. I started to read between the lines here. I thought, what he's doing here? He's setting up Hillary Clinton for the fix it, don't nix it. Because he realizes that this is still going to be going on in 3 years. This rollout is being tweaked. We have to, you know, this is all part of the adjustment of a gigantic restructuring.
Well, that's a more charitable take than I had. I mean, when I haven't said this on the air yet, but I will now.
I know.
When I heard Bill Clinton say that, I thought this is his way of saying, you know, how dare you, you know, this book came out that said that Obama was considering replacing Joe Biden with Hillary. And then Obama came out and said, no, I never even considered that, which is a diss on Hillary. And I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, a day or two or three later, Bill Clinton is kicking Barack Obama in the butt.
But look at it this way. I mean, that's just my take on it. But look at it this way. Does anybody think that in 10 years that we're going to be that Obamacare is going to be the way it is now?
No.
Or that we're going to go back to
No.
I would be a lot more worried, Tom, if the Affordable Care Act was having this trouble with the rollout and the Republicans were offering an alternative that I really didn't like.
Yes. Yeah, I guess the good news is their alternative is, let's talk about something else. Paul, thanks for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Yeah, in fact, the alternative, I guess, is let's have a kegger with the Koch brothers' money and get liver disease, and then you got no health care. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by Goats for the Old Goat.com, on the line with us. Hey, Ellen, greetings from Chicago.
Well, greetings to you. A lot going on today. Interestingly enough, the president did start out with a statement in the briefing room, and then it turned into essentially a press conference. And by my count, everything except one question had to do with the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. He said that they basically messed up on several areas. One, they thought that the grandfather clause would take care of people who did not have insurance or who had individual coverage. But, of course, these companies just started letting people go. So that was problem number one. Problem number two is, he said, the federal government does several things right, but contracting with IT is not one of them, that there are pages of regulations, pages on a contract. And he said that he should have, in his Monday morning quarterbacking, taken a look at what was really going on there. And he would never have gone around the country supporting that this was going to be available to people if, in fact, he had known that it was going to not work.
Right. And by the way, he should apply that same logic to Booz Allen. But that said, really the problem isn't so much that the website is down or that the insurance companies are canceling people, but the big problem is that they're happening at the same time. Because if the insurance companies are canceling people and people immediately then went to the website and said, well, I just got canceled, what can I get? Oh, hey, it looks pretty good. We would be hearing happy stories instead of sad stories.
Yes, I don't disagree. However, it is interesting. He did talk about, and actually Senator Schumer said this morning, said there's as many bad stories as there are good stories. But he did say that of the insurance market of people who were getting a lot of these cancellation notices, although small companies have gotten them as well, that it is 5% of the individual market. Now, I always like to tell stories of what has happened to me. And when I last looked, my last payment before I canceled my individual insurance, because I'm now on Shalene's, I looked and I was paying, I think $33 a month, or $34 a month, was over $2,000 a month. Mm. I mean, that is insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
So hopefully they can fix it.
Yeah, indeed.
So that was the first thing. He was also asked about Iran, and he talked about the sanctions that, of course, many members, both Republican and Democrat, want increased on Iran. He said, listen, we can always ramp it up, but we cannot let them have a nuclear weapon. If this brings them to the table, it will. We are not easing sanctions on banking. We are not going to ease sanctions on oil. Those sanctions will still be in place. We are going to ease some other sanctions, and we can always ramp them up basically at a moment's notice if Iran does not comply. Mm-hmm. So that's Obama today. Now, some other interesting issues. Janet Yellen today had her hearing before the Senate Banking Committee. She is fully expected to be confirmed. The question is the buying up of bonds. As you know, they've been spending, what, $85 billion a month to do that. There were Texas Senator Corker, who originally did not like her, sort of threw her a softball question by asking her how many times she'd voted to increase interest rates. There was some sort of bipartisan carping about the fact that there has not been enough for people who don't have access to the system, that Wall Street was getting rewarded, but the individual person wasn't. She then said, well, they have a decreased interest rate so the people can buy homes and could buy cars. Well, congratulations. They still probably have not done what they've needed to do. She said that they did not expect to purchase these bonds forever, but, you know, you have a book coming out on this topic.
Yes, I do. Actually, it came out day before yesterday.
So I think you know more about this than most, and certainly probably as much as Janet Yellen does.
We'll see.
Yes, we will see. So the other thing that really got my goat today, speaking of goats for the old goat, was the FBI director testified at Congress, and you know he was just nominated and secured in that job. And he said that cybersecurity was one of the things that was worse than almost anything else. They were very worried about it, from everything from people stealing secrets to, of course, terrorism, to trying to stop the grid, all that kind of thing. And what he said, and this is the scary part, is that there needs to be some incentives and perhaps some rules against companies getting sued for sharing information with the government. Now, I have not looked yet at the Electronic Privacy Foundation website, but I cannot believe that there is not going to be a hue and a cry from the Privacy Committee. And it's just like he said it, and people just didn't react. I was pretty astounded by that.
Yeah.
Also today, the TSA, that's the Transportation Security Administration, they testified today, I think it was before House Transportation Committee. They said that there had not been an attack on an airplane since 9/11 in the United States. Well, he's technically correct. We looked up the shoe bomber and the underwear bomber, and in fact, both of those flights were coming into the United States, but they were not originating in the United States. And they also have a sort of top secret program that they spend something like $90 billion, with that's with a B, dollars a year. It's a undercover program. The TSA maintains that this has been more effective than TSA screening. However, there is a GSA report that says it has been completely ineffective.
Right. Well, here's the question in my mind, Ellen. Is it that we have suddenly stopped all these terrorists, or was 9/11 a one-off? You know, I mean, Bin Laden had this little group of crazies, and they did something, and it horrified a lot of Muslims. And was it just a one-off?
A very interesting question, and we're spending a lot of money.
Right, which was Bin Laden's intent. He said that before the case, you know, that he was going to bleed us dry just like he did the Soviet Union. Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. and our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And, boy, what a day. The president has he caved? Has he acknowledged a political reality? Is he trying to give cover to the Democrats? Is he trying to calm down people like Senator Merkley, who's running for re-election in Oregon, and there's big money lined up against him, not just Jeff Merkley, but I mean, I was a little surprised, frankly, when he came out and said, wait a minute, we got to do something. But then it makes perfect sense. First of all, you know, there is a problem. We do have to do something about it. And Jeff Merkley is the kind of guy who says, you know, hey, there's a problem. Let's do something about it. And secondly, this is political dynamite. And the Republicans, rather than saying, and this is the big, you know, kind of unreported story, is that the Republicans, rather than saying, we will work with you to fix this, we have some suggestions, we think it would be better if there was a public option, or we think it would be better if, you know, whatever. Instead of that, all they offer, this Fred Upton piece, it's a poison pill. It's like, let's let people do whatever they want, let insurance companies do whatever they want for a year or two and see how it works, or... You know, and what's it going to do? It's going to kill the program. You can't have Romney Care work if you don't have everybody in. It's just like, I mean, this is like the guys who want to kill Social Security, right? They say, Social Security, you know, not, well, you know, yeah, it's saving the lives of, you know, 15% of elderly people and 40% of elderly people. It's their principal support, but... You know, there's 10, 20, 30% of elderly people who got lots of money. Why are we giving them Social Security? Well, because if you took them out of the system, it would kill it. That's how insurance works. It's all in or not. I mean, you have to have a large enough risk pool that for the one person who puts in $5,000 over the course of their lifespan, and then, you know, on a life insurance policy that you spend, you know, $100 a year on or whatever, the one person who puts in $5,000 and then dies and gets $10,000, that person is balanced by the people who put in money and then didn't die. Or like I did, I had a really nice life insurance policy for years. I mean, not really nice. It was pretty, you know, it would have protected Louise. It was not millions. I think it was $100,000, $200,000. But that was big money back in the 80s when I first took that thing out. And I was running a business and it was doing quite well. And I just, you know, it wasn't a lot of money. I'd had this policy for years and I just kept paying on it and paying on it and paying on it. And then we moved to Washington, D.C., and the bill got lost in the mail, and we didn't pay it, and all of a sudden, I don't have life insurance. And I go back, and I say, well, you know, maybe I should get some life insurance. And they're like, yeah, it's going to cost you 8 or 10 times what you were paying before, because you're considered a brand new thing. You know, to get it, it's like, you've got to be all in or not in. So... Now, all the life insurance agents don't need to be calling me out, but anyway, what is President Obama, what is he doing here? I think that he's trying to, frankly, I think he's trying to salvage the political fortunes of the Democratic Party. What was Bill Clinton doing when he said, you know, I think you ought to change this? Was he creating a space for President Obama to do that? Or was he kicking President Obama upside the head because President Obama a couple of days earlier had said, no, I didn't really seriously consider Hillary as a running mate? Which kind of sounds like, you know, it's not like, oh, yeah, you know, no, we seriously thought about her. She's wonderful. She would have made a vice good. But, you know, in the end, we ultimately decided that Joe, but, you know, no, he, you know.
Did he upset the big dog? I don't know. I don't have a clue. I don't really care, frankly. I find it interesting. I mean, you know, I guess the whole drama of it, you know, it's like, you know, I care, like, you know, what's going to happen on Scandal next week, you know, that kind of thing. But the fact of the matter is that the Republicans are not offering any alternative other than saying, we've got the best healthcare system in the world, which is a lie and everybody knows it. We got the best healthcare system in the world and we should keep it exactly the way it is. 40,000 people a year dying because they don't have health insurance. That's a fine thing because very few of them are Republicans. Well, actually, probably most of them vote Republican. But they don't do it because of Republican economic policies. They don't do it because of Republican health care policies. They do it because Republicans told them that those Democrats are going to let gays get married. Those Democrats are going to, you know, take away your 100-clip ammo clip. Those Democrats are going to make it so you can't pray in your city hall. I mean, that's... Actually, they take it to the extreme. They say those Democrats are going to wage a war on Christmas, and they're going to do it. They're going to make it illegal to pray. They're going to make it illegal to own a gun. They're going to come to your home or your office with a gun and stick it in your face and take away your guns. They're going to force away to, you know, that's what they're saying. And all you need to do is listen to right wing talk radio to know that I'm not exaggerating. And so those Republicans who are dying because they don't have health insurance are voting Republican because they think that they're protecting their right to defend themselves and their families. When there's no Democrat in America who's trying to take away self-defense guns. Or they think they're defending their right to go deer hunting in the fall. And there's no Democrat in America who's saying, you know, we should take away rifles from hunters. Or they think... The Democrats are going to say, no, you can't go sports shooting. And there's no Democrat in America who's suggesting that. In fact, the most of the Democrats aren't even going as far as I am and saying, A, we shouldn't have weapons of war on our streets. I mean, we did draw a line, right? You can't have a shoulder-fired surface-to-air missile. You can't have a 50 caliber rifle. Well, maybe you can now. I don't know. You couldn't when the assault ban was in effect. Let's draw the line at weapons of war. I mean, this is really simple. But anyhow, I digress. These, you know, so these basically lies, these God gun gays and a few other things. Oh, they're elite. You know, the arguments that the Republicans make about Democrats. They somehow always forget to mention that it was the Democrats who brought us Social Security over the strong objection of Republicans. It was Democrats who brought us Medicare over the strong objection of Republicans. It was Democrats who brought us child labor laws over the strong objection of Republicans. It was the Democrats who brought us the 40-hour work week and overtime over the strong objections of Republicans. It was Democrats who brought us safe conditions, working conditions in the workplace when thousands of people were dying in the workplace every year people were not dying over the objections of the Republicans, but the safety in the workplace rules were over the objections of Republicans. It was Democrats who brought us safe food and drinkable water. If you're pleased with the fact that you can open the tap in your house and drink the water, thank a Democrat. If you happen to live in an area where the fracking is going on and when you open your tap, the water comes out smelling like petroleum or you can light it on fire, thank Dick Cheney. Because he hand-walked through that EPA exemption for this new thing that Halliburton had invented called fracking. But anyhow, somehow the Republicans never tell us these things. So tragically, they offer nothing. And the media doesn't tell you these things. So you get all these people who have no idea what the Democratic Party really stands for, and the Democrats... I think tragically just kind of sit around and think everybody knows. Doesn't everybody know? No, everybody doesn't know. Somebody needs to tell them.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I guess I just did. We'll engage you in this in just a minute. We'll be right back. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Tom Harbin here with you, broadcasting live from WCPT in Chicago, because tonight at 7 o'clock I will be out at the Frugal Muse Bookstore in Darien, Illinois, suburban Chicago. And it's a free event. Feel free to show up. And Saturday I'll be in Minneapolis at the... Let me get the details here. Hang on just a minute. Let me get to the right page. There it is. Saturday I will be at the Operating Engineers Hall at 2829 Anthony Lane in Minneapolis. If you have a ticket which says anything other than that, ignore what it says, because we will be at the Operating Engineers Hall. The first 40 tickets were printed with the wrong address on them in the wrong place. But they're still valid. They still work. But you got to have a ticket. This is for the Saturday event. For tonight, here in Darien, everybody's welcome. It's totally free. You don't have to buy a book. You get to hear a speech and say hi, and, you know, we'll hang out. And it's cold flu season. We can do terrace fist bumps, or I'll shake your hand, whatever you'd like. But Saturday, this gig at the Operating Engineers is going to be food. There's going to be drinks. There's going to be a long rant by yours truly, questions and answers, hanging out, but you have to buy a ticket, and the ticket helps support the radio station, and the ticket also includes a free book. You get a book, you get food, you get drinks, you get me. And for that, you go to am950radio.com for the information on the Saturday event. But for the tonight event, just show up at the Frugal Muse Bookstore in Darien. So that's everything that's going on, I guess, on my list. Tim in Chicago, listening to WCPT. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air.
What I wanted to say, what you were saying right before the break, thank a Democrat for clean water, for a 40-hour work week, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
When are the Democrats going to stop being the punching bag of the Republicans? Why aren't they screaming from the rooftops? Everything you just said.
I really think that Democrats just assume everybody knows this. And the problem is that since the Reagan Revolution, there has been a generation of young people who have come up, and many of them are now middle age, who don't know this, you know, who somehow think that the Democrats are, you know, that all this stuff just magically sprang into being, that the middle class came about just because it's a natural thing. I'm sorry, it's not. It was the result of Democrats, you know, in the 1930s, in some cases losing their lives fighting for the right to unionize. People just think that, hey, of course you can trust the food at the supermarket. It's not going to make you sick. Of course, it's just like a natural thing. No, you can thank progressive Republicans, you know, and Democrats who worked together back in the 19-aughts, the 19-teens, the 1920s, and 1930s for, you know, the Pure Food and Drug Act and things like that. These people, they think that it's just, you know, it's a normal force of nature that you can drink the water out of your tap. No, it's because people fought and, you know, I don't know if they died for that, but they, you know, and on the list goes, everything that we've been talking about. And Reaganomics, you know, there's been this great amnesia. And anytime the media talks about how Democrats brought this about, the strategy that Lee Atwater laid out during the Reagan administration was yell and scream about liberal media bias, work the refs, so that the media is afraid to even mention the fact. You know, I mean, when was the last time that, like, on Meet the Press kind of thing, you saw, you know, David, what's his name, Gregory say to a Republican, you know, I know that, you know, all the way back to the 1930s, you guys, well, actually back to the 19-teens, you guys have been opposed to everything from child labor laws to Social Security, to the right to unionize, to the 40-hour work week, and now you're opposed to gays getting married. I mean, you know, obviously you haven't changed your stripes much over the years. You just, you know, it's like, you know, hey, buddy, you're on your own. And therefore, you know, I mean, why don't they ever predicate questions like that? I was just amazed the other day, this interview with President Obama I think, was it David Gregory did the interview? Who was it that interview a couple of days ago? Oh, it was Chuck Todd. That's right. Thank you. Thank you, Shino. Chuck Todd did this interview, and he says, are you concerned that people are going to think that you're a liar now? And it's like, what? I mean, you know, when was the last time you asked a Republican something like that? Oh, it would never happen, because for the next 6 weeks, Chuck Todd would be you know, 600 lashes with the with barbed wire.
But the how Democrats, do we change that? How does that change?
I think
you
we
know,
all
like
have to
Kennedy,
speak up.
We need more people like him, someone that will get up and yell at the Republicans and put them in their place.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to be speaking up. But the fact of the matter is that Democratic members of Congress were arrested at the White House a couple of weeks ago, protesting, as I recall, climate change. No, it was, you know, I can't. It was immigration. Yeah, it was the immigration thing, and protesting a lack of action by the Republicans in the House and whatnot, and it got no coverage. Can you imagine if Ted Cruz got arrested anywhere? It would be, you know, all day, every day for weeks. All the media wants to talk about is Republicans. And, I think it's tragic. I think it's just a tragic, tragic thing. And so, Tim, I'm talking about it. You need to be talking about it.
No, I didn't mean it that way. I mean the people on the TV.
Yeah.
You know,
these big corporations are owned by Republicans,
maybe,
Tim.
Maybe the average American would hear and pay attention, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, between the Lee Atwater strategy, which has been incredibly effective, and the fact that, you know, big corporate media is big corporate media. The Republicans are on the side of big corporations. The Democrats are on the side of working people. I mean, it's really simple, right? And you'd think that with all the stuff on health care, people would get that. You would think that with Aetna, people would get that. You would think that with everything that, you know, all these political battles that the Republicans and Democrats have been fighting, that people would get that. You would think that the regulation of the banks, that people would understand that the Democrats are on their sides and the Republicans are on the side of the banksters. But, you know, it's just amazing the ability of these Republicans to message this stuff. It blows my mind. Tim, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman here with you live from Chicago. Tonight I'll be in Darien, Illinois at the Frugal Muse Bookstore signing my new book, The Crash of 2016.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And Saturday I'll be in Minneapolis, and then the following week we're heading out to Denver and then to the West Coast. You can get the whole schedule over at TomHartman.com. Welcome back from the great Midwest, just down the road from where I was born and grew up, Chicago. I mean, I was born in Grand Rapids and grew up in Lansing, but I spent a lot of my life in Chicago, and it is so nice. And this is actually where my dad grew up. My dad grew up on the south side of Chicago. He used to tell me stories about his dad and his brothers and the friends sitting on the front stoops of the old brownstones, and they'd send my dad, who was about, 8, 10 years old at the time, down to the speakeasy that was run by Dillinger, I guess, or somebody like that, to bring back a bucket of beer during Prohibition, during the Great Depression. Amazing, amazing stuff. Anyhow, it's great to be back in Chicago, and I'm looking forward to being at the Frugal Muse in Darien tonight at 7 o'clock. And it's a free event. I'm going to be doing a book signing, and, well, I'll give a talk, and then we'll do a book signing. So it's going to be a good, fun evening, and I'll fill you all in on my new book, The Crash of 2016, what it's all about, why that title, all that kind of stuff, if you happen to be in the Chicago area. If you are in Minneapolis, I'll be there on Saturday. And if you are in Denver or San Francisco or Los Angeles or Portland, I will be in all those cities next week. So, check it out. You can get all the, and I'll give the details as time goes on, as we get closer to each one of these dates, but check it out at TomHartman.com. You can get all the details. Doug in St. Peter's, Missouri. Hey, Doug, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you been? I'm holding out for you to come to St. Louis before I buy your book, because I want you to autograph it for me.
I would love to. It's been a long time since I've been there. It's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
Belleville. My aunt and uncle used to live in Belleville, and we used to spend summers there when I was a kid, which is just across the river, right? Isn't it? In Illinois?
Yeah. I used to go to the bike swaps out there.
Yeah. Okay.
Swap meets for parts for my Harley.
Yeah. So what's up, Doug?
Okay. You, on your, on the guy, your guest that you had that came in,
mm-hmm.
I would have put the guy who you had call in talking about the gay marriage. I would have approached it about with the argument that how many states right now recognize gay marriage? See where I'm going with it? Because
no.
There's discrimination now out there on them. And if you drive down the highway and the speed limit's 60, everybody has to follow that rule. That's what leads to a orderly flow of traffic.
Right.
Now, I'm against somebody being able to drive 90 because they're driving a BMW. All right?
Right.
The equality of the speed limit allows the traffic to continue to flow just the same as allowing gay people not to be discriminated at work allows them to have input into their job. If you sit there and they have to worry about, well, the fact that they're gay and their employer can discriminate, they're also going to be shutting off a huge part of the knowledge base that would be able to help them run their business as well.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a ridiculous argument to say that.
It is. And
people will make it up.
Yeah. I'm not sure that that's the best analogy or metaphor. I mean, I remember the Autobahn, but, and Nevada used to not have a speed limit, I think the real point is there are people, and there have been for all of humanity, but, you know, this is something that seems to be unique to our culture. If you look at the way that many indigenous cultures treated gay people, they honored them, they respected them. Many of them did. But in Western civilization, in our society, and in many other societies around the world, modern societies, post-agricultural societies, people, because of the way that they were born, people who are gay, have been subject to not just discrimination, but murder. I mean, you know, violence. And this is something that needs to come to an end. And just acknowledging their human right, acknowledging their right to not have to hide who they are from their employer is such a fundamental, core, simple human dignity, value, human rights thing that I'm just astounded that John Boehner is just so cavalierly saying, we're not going to pick this up. We're not going to hold a vote on this. I think it's just so sad. Doug, you make an excellent point. Thank you for the call, and thanks for listening. Jenny in American Falls, Idaho. Hey, Jenny, what's on your mind today?
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Tom.
Sure. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
I wanted to respond to a comment a few days ago you had on your very, very ugly segment. You had a picture of a teacher who was fired from her job because her fiancé's hand was on her bikini-clad breast.
Mm. But she was fired, but he was not, and they were both teachers at the same school. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was not fired, but she was, and it was his hand on her bikini-clad breast.
Right.
And this connects back to what you said earlier about the tyranny of the majority over the minority. And I would submit to you that my life and many lives around here have been devastated by this. It's sad because...
You're talking about sexism
here,
now.
Pardon me?
You're talking about sexism now.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And the problem is it's here in southeastern Idaho, there's no separation of church and state.
Mm.
And for 55 years, I've lived as an LDS Mormon. And, you know, I'm in great conflict over this because I've lived all across the nation. I've never seen this there but here. But I've never lived where the LDS population was 90% as it is here. And I see it. It's devastated my life. It's devastated the lives of many because, according to the Mormon faith, which is 90% of the population here, men are entitled, and only men, only males are entitled to God's authority here on earth, which makes them the upper class. Women are valued as long as they have children, and they only have access to that authority, the priesthood, God's authority on earth, through the male.
Right.
So this infiltrates all of life here, the court system, jobs, education, home life. My precious daughter had 11 children between hers and her husband. She suffered spousal abuse, left with traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder. She held a knife to the to the face of their six-year-old, and guess who has the children? Because she has a brain injury. And this man is, I tell you what, the farthest away from walking on water as anybody could be. So I just wanted to make a comment about the segment that you had on and explain how devastating it is here. And I wonder what can be done, if anything can be done, about the separation of church and state here.
Well, it even goes beyond that. I think there was a time in the United States when our republic was founded, women did not have access to the court system except through the mechanism available to children and the mentally retarded. They had to have a male represent them and control them. A woman could not own property. A woman could not make out a will. A woman, if she was married and had children and her husband died, a man was appointed by the court to determine what religion her children would be raised in and whether or not she could even keep her children. And that man took one-third of her estate as payment for doing that. And he had an absolute decision over how the remaining two-thirds of her estate, one-third of which she would have access to, if she got remarried, he regulated the remaining two-thirds of that estate. And if she got remarried, she kept one-third of her estate, and one-third of her estate goes to her new husband. I mean, these are and this is just the beginning. I have the whole long list in a book I wrote called Unequal Protection. We have what you are seeing, what you're describing in the LDS Church is the tail end of what has been basically, you know, this paternalistic, patriarchal, hierarchical, religious, cultural, political, economic, and legal structure that has been part of what we call Western civilization from the get-go. And Dan Quinn would suggest to you in his book Ishmael that it goes right back to the beginning of agriculture, but that's a whole nother discussion. And the way through it, I think, is not just the separation of church and state, Jenny. I think it is the enlightenment of church. You know, we have to be working to and it's not just in the LDS church. You see this this is the problem of women in the burqa in Afghanistan. It's not that different. It's the exact same thing. And these are these frightened men who are asserting their authority, or testosterone-soaked men, asserting their authority over women and controlling the lives of women in ways that are absolutely inconsistent with any kind of decent human values that indigenous people like the Iroquois had rejected. You know, people who had actually experience over the years with how to make a sustainable society. And I think that this begins with empowering and educating women. And that means in your church, the LDS church, women needing to speak up and speak out the way that they did in the Methodist church, the church that I was raised in, the way that they did 50, 60, 70 years ago, the way that they did John Adams' wife was trying to do it in the I believe it was the Presbyterian Church in the 1790s. She was not successful. But and we all need to be engaged in this. The education and the empowerment of women is one of the most important issues in the world, particularly if you want to control population. And I'm very sorry to hear about your situation. Thank you for calling and sharing it with us, Jenny. We got a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Live in Chicago today, we're in just a couple of hours. I'll be out in Darien, Illinois at the Frugal Muse Bookstore signing my new book, The Crash of 2016. Come on by, it's free. And it's also available at the Frugal Muse, where I will be signing them tonight after giving a rather lengthy rant to anybody who wants to listen, which should be great fun. 7 o'clock, the Frugal Muse in Darien, Illinois, broadcasting live today from WCPT. And a big tip of the hat and many thanks to all the fine folks here at WCPT for making this show possible and for, you know, hosting me today and tomorrow. And, of course, tomorrow, you know, it's going to be Brunch with Bernie and should be a lot of fun. So, Dan in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening to KABQ. Hey, Dan, what's up? Dan?
Dan?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh,
Excuse me, it's such a long wait.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. This goes back to an earlier caller, I think of the massage therapist, who made some comments, like, you know, I'm in the health industry, I'm a pharmacist, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she got close to saying that, you know, get rid of the drug companies, and I'm seeing people, you know, I'm giving massages to that still have cancer and all this. So there are a number of comments that were sort of out of whack. I believe massage therapy is fine for relaxation, and that's about it. Naturopathy and homeopathy and some of these other things have to be FDA approved. The medications, because as you know or may know, in 1994, the Food and Drug, or the Food and Cosmetic Act was passed, which created a large loophole for these types of medications that they did not have to be FDA tested.
Sure.
Which means if you go into a herbalist or these vitamin stores, you can pick up the label and it'll say relieve symptoms of pain or whatever symptoms, but you cannot put on there a specific disease.
Right.
If you put on a specific disease, you are then treating, and that has to go through the FDA.
No, I understand, Dan, and I'm not opposed to our having standards of care or standards of product, and in fact,
which they don't right now.
Well, they do and they don't. I mean, the National Nutritional Foods Association has done a pretty good job over the years. I was at one of their early trade shows back in 1979. I think, you know, it's when they were really starting to get on the track on this thing. There are very reputable supplement companies that I think you can solidly trust. There are others that are pretty dicey. And the pretty dicey part, I would share your skepticism about and have concerns about. If you go to I read this on my BBC app this morning. And interestingly, over the weekend before last, Louise and I were out in Los Angeles, and I had a long conversation with a fellow who is doing cutting edge work on longevity. And I mean, serious stuff. He's working on telomeres, you know, these kind of like the shoelace ends that are at the end of DNA, and trying to determine how is it possible to have somebody live an extra 10, 20, 30 years with a very, very high quality of life that, you know, beyond what we have right now. And I read this story on BBC on the airplane on the way over, and I forwarded it to him, and he forwarded me back a response. And let me just share this with you. You can find this over at BBC.com, I'm sure. It's certainly on the BBC Apple app. And that is that they found that people who are depressed have shorter telomeres on their DNA. In other words, they age faster than people who are not depressed. And people who have been depressed, in fact, have you know, somewhat shorter telomeres. But depression is an ongoing risk for quality of life. And so I sent this to him, and he sent it back to me, you know, saying it's not just a depression. It's stress as well. And there's a flip side to that, and we're finding that in those things that release stress or reduce stress, or that are, I mean, we don't even have a good word for it, that are the opposite of stress, that create endorphins, that make you feel really good, those things actually make your telomeres more resilient and less likely to shorten when cells divide. In other words, they extend your life. And, I mean, he didn't say massage is one of those things, but I don't think it's a huge logical leap to say that massage would be one of those things.
Big leap, but more testing, yeah.
But my point is, you know, there's a lot that we don't know. I'm not knocking conventional medicine. I've used conventional medicine all my life, but I'm also not willing to knock non-conventional medicine, because I've used that all my life, and I can tell you I've gotten some very, very good results using herbal remedies. And yeah, I know, you know, homeopathy is just sugar pills, but I, you know, sugar pills work better than morphine 43% of the time in placebo-controlled studies. I mean, maybe we should come up with something called placebo. I don't know. There's more to all this than we know.
Okay, can I make a comment, please, quickly?
Certainly, you may.
Yeah, the thing is, we've got a couple things here. They have to be FDA tested. They have to go through clinical trials,
right,
just like all legend drugs do.
Although have you have to acknowledge, Dan, that a lot of that is being spun with
money. Wait, let me finish.
Go for it.
They have side effects. Seconds. Many of them can interact with anticoagulants. There's a couple of those.
Sure.
They have to go through that testing. Otherwise, you don't know what you're getting. If you want to spend money on those, then I would say just my own personal opinion is take that as the last thing you got. If there's nothing out mm-hmm. there that has a percentage of working, which you cannot prove that with a lot of these now because they're not FDA tested, then use it. But
if I had a bacterial infection, I'm not going to treat it by sprinkling herbs on it. I mean, you know, I think that there's a rational middle ground here, Dan, and I suspect that we're probably circling around it. Dan, we're out of time. In fact, we're out of the show. So thanks a lot for the call, and you know, thanks for caring enough to call in. Tomorrow, it's going to be Friday. I'll be back here at WCPT. We'll be doing our show live from Chicago, and first hour will be Brunch with Bernie, Senator Bernie Sanders, and then anything goes Friday. So be sure to check it out. And if you're in the Chicago area tonight, Frugal Muse Bookstore in Darien, Saturday will be in Minneapolis, and you can check out that out at am950radio.com for all the details on that. Also, off TomHartman.com. Tag, you're it. I'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.